presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So Dog Nation's recruiting insider Jeff Sintel said something on our program yesterday. I knew it was true, and yet to hear him say it out loud as starkly as he did and as matter-of-factly as he did, I did think was kind of an interesting moment. We were talking about George Pickens and the dazzling catch that Pickens made in the now viral video, and no, I'm not going to talk about that here right now. We've done plenty of that over the course of the last couple of days. But in the midst of talking about that, Jeff, because of the question I asked him, was talking about how the value of that viral video might aid UGA's recruiting efforts for players like Pickens. Dynamic playmakers, unique skill set, guys like that seem to have been paying attention to what Pickens did. And in the midst of discussing this, Jeff used a phrase that we use from time to time, and Jeff says, I've kind of got verifiable proof this is indeed going on. What Jeff said on this was that he knows for a fact, because he's heard it from other people, that negative recruiting is going on, that programs speak out about Georgia on the basis of the fact that they haven't had big-time receiving totals. No 1,000-yard receiver. Jeff cited in particular the fact that really I think only Mecole Hardman last year barely eclipsed the 100-yard mark in a single game, and that's essentially the high-water mark for an individual receiver, you know, going back the last couple of years under Kirby Smart, and that's a negative recruiting point that a lot of programs make against Georgia. And one of the things I'm a big believer in, and the reason why I wanted to start with that today as a part of our program here today, is because I think one of the jobs that you do as a program is go out there and eliminate potential fodder for negative recruitment. Because for the most part, in decisions for where you want to play in college or what kind of car you want to buy or where you want to live, it's not so much that you choose a place or you choose a thing, it's that you eliminate the other choices. And I think that Georgia's job in terms of how it positions itself compared to its rivals in recruiting really kind of comes down to, how easy does Georgia make it to be negatively recruited against, or the opposite of that, how difficult does Georgia make it to be eliminated from consideration? So obviously, as you watch James Coley's offense in 2019, moving ahead to 2020 and beyond, Georgia establishing itself as not just a place that running backs want to be and not just a place that elite offensive linemen want to be, but also a place that very good tight ends and wide receivers want to be, that's one of the ways in which Georgia can eliminate an aspect of negative recruiting that I think that some programs are using against it. So does that make sense? Because that transition is to something else as well, because I believe there is potentially another aspect of negative recruiting that goes on against Georgia. Because let's face it, Georgia has built monumental recruiting momentum. Georgia has put together an unprecedented run of, at least compared to its own program history, in terms of adding very high four-star and five-star prospects. Georgia has done an amazing job of doing that. So therefore, there are a lot of programs out there who are going to attempt to upend the momentum that Georgia's created. And one of the ways that might be done is for a various program, and gosh knows, if you travel around rival fan message boards or you see opposing fans, rival fans on social media, you know for a fact that one of the things that you hear a good bit is, well, Georgia gets all those five-star guys, but what do they do with them? Georgia gets those four- and five-star guys, but how well do they develop them? It's sort of like the last refuge for someone who's looking for a way to take Georgia down a peg. You say, well, let's find out if Kirby Smart's a good enough coach, because that's what it seemingly always comes back down to. Let's find out if Kirby Smart's a good enough coach to actually develop these players once they get on the Georgia campus. And here's what I think is very interesting. We've actually done our fair share of talking about this over the course of the last couple of days. There is a lot of evidence to suggest that many of the players that arrive on the Georgia campus, sometimes it is of the five-star variety. We'll get to one of those in just a moment. Sometimes it's of the less than five-star variety. You see a lot of those, for instance, in the defensive backfield, where those players have come to Georgia not just with prodigious talent, but also with a hunger and a desire to learn and grow, and they have been well-developed at the University of Georgia. And do not discount how valuable that ends up being in terms of how future recruits view this program. Because it's one thing for a five-star to come to Georgia and light the world on fire, and it's another thing for a five-star to come to Georgia, experience the growing pains that you would probably expect from a transition from high school and college, but to be coached up, developed, and worked up to the point where all of a sudden now he's seemingly fulfilling the potential that he's already that he's always had. An example of that is Georgia a right tackle Isaiah Wilson. Because Wilson has spoke very candidly in the past, going back to the spring. I had a chance to chat with him along with some other reporters about this, about not playing in 2017. And Wilson said flat out, listen, I wasn't ready to play in 2017. I had to watch that year, but I learned by watching. Kirby was even more candid, frankly, when Wilson first arrived on campus, talking about the fact that he practiced, do you remember this phrase? He practiced a lot better indoors than outdoors. He was more comfortable in the climate-controlled indoor facility than he was in the Georgia heat after traveling down from Brooklyn, New York, to be a part of the program. This was a young man in 2017 who was not ready, and he was potential fodder for any program out there who wanted to negative recruit against the Bulldogs. Ooh, you don't want to go to Georgia and be an offensive lineman. You might flounder the way that Isaiah Wilson looked like he was floundering in 2017, having a hard time finding a spot on the field. But everything changed in 2018. Wilson earned his starting spot, became a freshman All-American, and when he spoke to reporters again yesterday, he talked about the growth and development he's had when it comes to his time at the University of Georgia, starting with his just basic understanding of the game. Here's Isaiah Wilson.
I've become a student of the game. I like to see what's happening before it happens, see the blitzes before they come, read my keys, and know what to do before the ball is even snapped.
I mean, listen, I don't know this for a fact, but I have a strong suspicion that Isaiah Wilson wasn't recognizing blitzes before they happen, seeing keys as they unfold. He wasn't doing that back summer of 2017, but it's an example of how he's grown and developed over the course of the time at the University of Georgia. And it's not just the mental cognitive part of all of this. It's also the physical part of this as well. As I said before, Smart at one time before kind of chided Wilson for being a player more comfortable with indoor practices than outdoor practices. He kind of got to him. He probably had, I think even Wilson would admit, a little bit of bad weight on him when he first showed up. He was a big guy, and that's what attracted Sam Pittman to him to begin with, but maybe a little too big when he first showed up on the Georgia campus. That apparently is not the case anymore, as this exchange with Mike Griffith will show you.
You've always been a big guy, but how different is that weight being carried now?
My arms are bigger, my legs are bigger, my stomach is smaller. That's how we did that one.
I love that theme. That's how we did that. My arms and legs got bigger. My stomach got smaller. Wilson should write a book and he should give it to me, because I will tell you that's probably something I could use a dose of right now. A little bigger arms, maybe some bigger legs, certainly a smaller stomach, whatever worked for Wilson. Maybe that's what I need to be doing there as well. But let me just kind of wrap up this portion of the conversation by saying this way. Wilson's role for this current Georgia team is incredibly valuable, but do not discount what his value might also be to future UGA recruiting efforts as well. When a guy like that, a former five-star player who was maybe also a guy that was going to have to get acclimated to SEC Live over the course of a couple years on campus, when he's saying, I'm a student of the game now, I know what I'm supposed to do, physically I'm in the best shape of my life, that's the kind of thing that also has a little bit of a ricochet effect when it comes to recruiting as well. Now, before I move off this topic, let me kind of shift gears, still on the subject of Wilson, but on a completely different point. Because speaking of recruiting, and I do love this stuff, I will admit that, Wilson yesterday was asked about, because let's face it, these offensive linemen are doing battle with the defensive line every single day in practice, big sequence during a Saturday scrimmage. And one of the things that media members like to do, and I will admit I really like this as well, because we don't see much of this. So people who do have eyes on this, people who are experiencing this in real time, their opinion on this kind of stuff is important. So Wilson was asked about the guys that he's battling with in practice, and he gave a name that I think UGA fans will like to hear. Here's more of the Georgia right tackle.
Anybody jumping out on that D-line at Chazan? Anybody new or young?
Trayvon Walker. Very athletic and rangy guy. Super athletic.
So listen, I mean, I love to hear that. I don't know, because of the way that defensive line is a tough spot for freshmen to play, I don't know how much of that we'll see from Walker, especially early in the year, but it sure is nice to hear from Isaiah Wilson that he's seeing that. And the same path that Wilson on the offensive side of the ball has gone down in terms of developing himself, it would not surprise me if Trayvon Walker travels that same path on the defensive side of the ball as well. Hello, everybody. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us here today and really excited about what's going to be coming up on Thursday, June 22nd. The big event for us is the Kroger kickoff. It's going to take place that night at the Kroger Marketplace right there in Cumming. We did this last year. Hundreds of folks on hand to start the season. This year's event's going to be even bigger and better for reasons I'll be telling you about as we get closer. But you got to mark your calendars. You got to be there with us. Thursday, August 22nd, 6 p.m., 5550 Bethel View Road in Cumming. Let me give you the address one more time so you can write this down. It's 5550 Bethel View Road in Cumming. The beautiful Kroger Marketplace right there. I cannot wait to see you for our Kroger kickoff as we start the 2019 season by telling you everything that's going to be important for the Dogs this season. And I'll try to my best to explain why maybe this is the year the Dogs take it all the way this year. Can't wait to be a part of the Kroger kickoff with you next Thursday right there at the Kroger Marketplace in Cumming. Really excited about that. One of the guys that will be there with us on Thursday is Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. We'll hear from Mike coming up in a couple of minutes on our program today on Dog Nation Daily. Before we do that, let me go around the doghouse presented today by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I want to go back to Isaiah Wilson here for a moment, because one of the things, if you read the practice report yesterday at DogNation.com that you heard was, and I wasn't there yesterday, so it's hard for me to kind of figure out what this was. There's a lot of, you know, scuttlebutt out there. But the one thing, at the very least, I'm comfortable saying, DeAndre Swift, the Georgia running back, was not seen at practice during the time in which the media was out there. So, once again, we've heard from Isaiah Wilson in the show already today. Let me let you hear Wilson being asked about the perception that Swift was absent, at least while the media was out there yesterday. Wilson kind of dodges this question just a bit.
You didn't see him out there today. Did he practice at all?
That is... You guys, Coach Smart, that question? I don't know. I don't really look back there. I focus on the defense and what's in front of me.
So, listen, I don't know what to make about that. You know, as I said before, media members did not see Swift out there. There were some reports that Swift did come back to a practice a little bit later on. I certainly don't have any reason to believe that there's anything wrong with DeAndre Swift. The one thing there seems to be relatively unanimous reporting on is that Swift is probably fine, just wasn't out there during practice when the media was there. However, there is one aspect of this coverage I do want to push back on just a little bit, because I think fans get a bad rap on this when Swift is not seen at practice. There's going to be this thought of, oh, fans are going to be hysterical about this. Fans are going to be up in arms. They're going to be worried about DeAndre because, obviously, he's so important to the Georgia offense. But when it comes to Swift in particular, even though what happened yesterday is likely not a big deal at all, in fact, I have no reason to believe it is a big deal, it is worth reminding here a little bit that when it comes to situations involving Swift, the Georgia program, Kirby Smart in particular, has not always been exactly as forthright as I think it could have been. Now, Kirby doesn't owe this to me, but when there are secrets kept, it's only going to raise speculation in a weird moment like a Tuesday when Swift is not seen out there while reporters are out there. I mean, let's go back to early September when Swift wasn't being used a lot, and Kirby Smart at the time would have you believe that was no big deal and nothing going on with that whatsoever. Do you remember this exchange, for instance?
Coach DeAndre Swift didn't play a whole lot after earlier. Was that injury or just coach's decision?
No, I thought DeAndre played the first drive. He had the first two or three carries. I mean, we rotated pretty much after that, and then once we felt like the game was in hand, we were going to play some of those other guys who hadn't had as many carries.
So that's what Smart said then, but come to find out, Swift was recovering from groin surgery and then come November was seemingly a much healthier player and a much better player, but that's not the story we got early in the season. And then there was the situation from spring practice where former Georgia running back Robert Edwards had been there, had seen practice, and apparently told us something here on Dog Nation Daily that I don't know we ever heard anywhere else. Here's the former back on Swift.
I think the most impressive thing that I saw was that these guys are out there practicing, hurt in spring practice. They don't have a game this week. DeAndre has a tender ankle right now. He's getting it wrapped up, and he's out there on the practice field with his team practicing.
So I never heard that anywhere else but right here on Dog Nation Daily that apparently Swift was dealing with an ankle during spring practice. Now, once again, let me reiterate. I have no reason to believe that anything's wrong with DeAndre Swift right now. When reporters are back out there in the practice field on Thursday, my guess is you'll see Swift. But as long as there is a story behind the story, and seemingly with Swift there always has been one, as long as there's a story behind the story, there's always going to be some speculation from fans when something doesn't appear to line up with what we've been told publicly. Nonetheless, it's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And, you know, my friends at ESOG, they are a solutions-based company. That means if you're dealing at your house with something involving, you know, water creeping into your crawl space or your basement, or if you've got a foundation issue, one of those horizontal cracks, the kind of thing you don't want to see. Well, if it's a simple fix, then ESOG is going to tell you exactly how to fix it simply. Just go to the hardware store and get you blah, 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 whatever it'll take. They'll tell you that. But a lot of times this kind of stuff, when it comes to foundation issues, the structural integrity of your home, a lot of the times this is a more serious fix. And the good news is Engineered Solutions of Georgia has two full-time engineers on staff to make fixing that kind of stuff effortless and painless for you. It's hard work for them, but they're the experts. They know how to get that done. So my advice is, if you're facing a waterproofing issue or a foundation issue, dial this number, 678-ESOG now. Once again, dial 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. For more on UGA practice, let's talk to Mike Griffith right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Good to have you as a part of the program here today, and fun to find out more about what happened in Athens yesterday and the aftermath continuing from what I guess Kirby Smart will say was a little bit of a lackluster, disappointing scrimmage. For all that and a whole lot more, let's talk to Mike Griffith here for a moment. And Mike, I know you wrote about DeAndre Swift's absence, at least during the media portion of practice yesterday. As I said to our audience before, I have no reason to believe this is any kind of, you know, serious issue. I'm sure Swift is probably fine, but for many fans, and I speak on behalf of fans, there's always going to be a little bit of extra anxiety when it comes to Swift, because it always seems like there's a story behind the story. You know, supposedly he's fine in September, yet we find out he's recovering from groin surgery. You know, some other things that have been kind of, you know, talked about in the past with him. He's a valuable member of the Georgia roster, and when he's not seen, even for just a couple of minutes, it's going to raise the blood pressure of a few fans here and there, is it not?
Well, I agree, D.A., and I think you're right. You know, I'm working on a story much to that same vein. I mean, I'd say get used to it, you know, and you know, when you've got a dynamic athlete like a DeAndre Swift, you know, we see the moves that he makes, the explosivity, the cuts. You know, he's just so finely tuned, and, you know, Jeff Santelli and I talk about it all the time, whether we want to compare him to a Porsche or a German car that needs fine-tuning, or a race car. He is that fast twitch guy, much like sprinters, I suppose. And you just wonder, you know, the word that comes up is durability. And I don't know if that's fair or not. I mean, does it mean he's not durable if he gets extra treatment, or that he needs a little bit more recovery time, or is this something that's kind of the norm? Is this the way maybe you want to treat a guy like a DeAndre Swift? You want to make sure that 100% sure that he's healthy. I know that Kirby turned him loose in the practice, and I will say this. I was surprised to see him going head up with Tate Crowder and Monty Rice in the hitting drill. I know that at other schools that I covered, like, for example, Le'Veon Bell at Michigan State wasn't doing those drills his junior year. He didn't need any, you know, he wasn't put out there to mash heads with starting linebackers. So I do think DeAndre Swift is a tough kid. I think they expose him to you know, as much contact and practice as anyone else. But as far as how he handles that, you know, he's not Elijah Holyfield. Holyfield was an incredibly durable guy, and I think that's why Holyfield started last year.
Well, when it comes to just missing a little bit of one practice, that won't cause me to question Swift's durability because, frankly, as I said before, I don't have any reason to suspect anything's wrong with him right now. But the one thing I will agree with you on is I do believe that Swift is a different kind of player than a fully healthy Zamir White is. You compared him to Elijah Holyfield before. I don't think there's any doubt that Swift and Holyfield are very different kind of players. You compared him to a sports car, I'll compare him to an investment. You know, the capitalization rate, the return rate on one touch from DeAndre Swift is really pretty high, and so therefore, you know, to see the best of Swift, you don't necessarily need to see him getting 25 carries a game. You don't necessarily need to see him doing some of the kinds of things other running backs around college football are going to do in that regard. So from that, you know, from that standpoint, you know, he probably will be and has been used a little differently than some UGA running backs will be.
Yeah, is there a point of diminishing return on the investment? Is that what you're saying, DA, that, you know, 15 carries could be better than 20 carries in the long run?
I think
I'm going to roll with you on that.
Yeah, in all seriousness, I do think for DeAndre Swift, 15 carries might be better than 20 carries. I really do, yeah, because of what he can do on an explosive level that other running backs, maybe even Zamir White, for instance, is at least right now not able to match.
Right. No, I'd agree. And you know, you look in the backfield, and they do have a full complement of other runners back there. And, you know, and why would you give them more work if you've got someone else who's just as capable? Now, you want to here's the bottom line to me. Kirby Smart wants DeAndre Swift healthy the first week of December and in January. And he wants to be undefeated then, too, by the way. So how do you get there? I mean, how much DeAndre Swift are we really going to see in the month of September? How much do we really need to see in the month of September? I mean, the first half against Vanderbilt, what's the over-under for carries against Vandy if we think Georgia wins by three touchdowns, maybe 12? And then how much do you really need to see him against Arkansas State and Murray State? I mean, 5, 7, 10? I don't know those numbers, but you sure want to see him a lot against Notre Dame. And if this is part of how DeAndre's managed, you know, with the extra treatment. And he said it. He said it last week. You might have even, I think he might have been there that day. He said, I live in the training room. And that's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, getting treatment is a very responsible thing. But when it bleeds over into practice time, we all kind of wonder. And, you know, I was there when some NFL scouts were talking about it. And someone asked where he was, and another scout said to him, Coach said he'll come out after media leaves. He's in the training room, you know, getting treatment. And had I not heard that conversation, my pulse might have gone up a little bit more yesterday, too. But having overheard, because those scouts are there to see that. And that resonates with them, too, by the way. Because they're looking at Swift as you mentioned, you compared him to an investment. He really is an investment for an NFL team in the draft.
Let me transition and speak about another running back just for a moment, and that's Zamir White. And, you know, it's really amazing all the complimentary things that Georgia players say when asked about White, and they all kind of seem to center around the same kind of stuff, about just how explosive and physically tough he can be. I know, what was it that Coley called him, a rhino or a moose or whatever he called him? I mean, he's you know, he seems to have that reputation, but there are also these whispers that, you know, he may have caught passes on Saturday, which seemingly bolsters the claim that, that you know, this – you know, throwing the ball to running backs, did it a lot with Swift a year ago, doing it with White this year. That's going to be a big part of the Georgia offense maybe this season. One way or another, I think the thing that the fan ought to be the most excited about is it certainly doesn't seem like Zamir White is a player any different from any of the other 84 guys on the roster right now. He is a formerly injured running back. He is not a currently injured running back. He is a guy that is seemingly back on track and back playing, and my guess is August 31st, and barring some sort of weird setback, that's exactly how he's going to be used against Vanderbilt. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, and you know, Kirby talking about pass protection. Kirby talking about ball protection. You know, we're past the pity party for Zamir White. You know, I mean, everybody's like, okay, now he's a football player. Like you just said, he's just like anybody else. And he's going to get chirped on about how well he pass protects. He's going to get chirped on about, you know, his ball security. And because they're looking to play the guy. I mean, and I put out that highlight video. I released that highlight video. And, you know, I mean, Channing Tindall is a tough guy, folks. I mean, there's no shame in this that Channing Tindall got knocked sideways. I mean, Zamir White is he's a bad dude, man. And, you know, and Isaiah was talking about it last night. You know, he pities the safety that's that's got to come up and fill the hole. I mean, Zamir White runs with passion. He runs angry. He's a bigger, faster, more physical version than Elijah Holyfield was last year.
And, you know, when people have asked me, you know, is there a way or a reason to temper expectations when it comes to White, the only thing I'll say in response to that, Mike, is I am of the belief, and listen, this is speculation on my part, but that's essentially what I do for a living. I'm of the belief, because of what I think I know about a healthy DeAndre Swift, what I think I know about a healthy Zamir White, what I believe is true regarding Brian Herrien, I do think the overall distribution of productivity for the Georgia running backs this season is going to be a little different than it's been the last couple of years. It was a 1,000-yard season for each of Elijah Holyfield and Swift a year ago. It was Michelle and Chubb in 2017, and you had a kind of a clear number three running back below that. As we get closer to the season, I find myself firmly in the belief that this year the carries may be spread a little more evenly among White, Swift, and Brian Herrien. But I do think, as much praise has been tossed Amir White's way, I still think that Brian Herrien's a significant part of the Georgia offense. So if there's ever a reason to bet the under on what White may do this year, maybe the only reason I'd be tempted to do that is I don't think that Brian Herrien's going to sit the bench a whole bunch. I think he's out there a good bit himself. So do with that what you will, but I see this as more of a three-headed monster where each guy gets in the neighborhood of 800 or 900 yards, more so than Swift getting 1,500 and White getting 1,100 and somebody else, you know, kind of coming in third place there. I see it a little more evenly distributed amongst that trio. How do you see it?
I'm with you, and I think the schedule has something to do with it. And, you know, as we were just talking about a minute ago, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of Brian Herrien in September. I think Brian's going to do a lot of the dirty work. I think he's going to do a lot of the blue-collar work. I think he's going to do a lot of the goal line work. But I think Samir White is too. But as the season progresses, because he does have other, remember, he hadn't played football in a year and a half. So some of these other skills, he's going to go after. I mean, he's a cannibal. I mean, he guy's going to go 110%. I mean, you know, he's going to attack every day, you know, but it's going to take some time, you know, to get back in sync and get these other football skills back, the pass protection, the route running, these type of things, the things that Brian Herrien as a senior is a little more polished at right now. So go ahead and use Brian Herrien in September, you know. And by the end of the year, because Brian's going to make it through the year. I mean, Brian's a tough guy. He's shown you that. He's a durable guy. So what you ideally want is to win every football game and to be at max efficiency come the first week of December. And the way to do that is to bring Zamir along a little bit slower. You've got the luxury to do that. I mean, I think he could play a lot more early, but you've got the luxury to bring him along a little bit slower in terms of game reps. You know, protect Swift a little bit. You know, keep him all waxed and polished up there in the shop. Yeah, got to clean those tires on Swift and keep him in the garage on the rainy days for now. But you want all four of those guys, or five of those guys, who knows, maybe Kenny McIntosh emerges. You want them all clicking come that November home stretch and into December.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. You mentioned the other backs, and Matthew McGahee, Kibo Weir, in our Facebook comment section, we're talking about James Cook, essentially saying, with me talking up Herrien, talking up White, talking up Swift, that there's not enough talk about James Cook. And, Mike, I will admit that my opinion is that the three guys that I just mentioned do have some separation ahead of James Cook. That's once again speculation on my part, but you got to have an opinion about something, and that just happens to be my opinion. I believe.
Well,
Go ahead.
I'll disagree with you. I will disagree with you, and not for the sake of those commenters, but you know that I've been the guy doing backflips about James Cook ever since I saw him in that scrimmage. You know that. Everybody's clear on that. That I think James Cook is an unbelievable running back. I think he might ultimately be the guy that does the most in the NFL. How's that for a prediction? His explosivity, his electricity, and the way that I hear Kirby Smart talking about him, I'm not exactly sure how they're going to, you know, I know he's on special teams. I know they're looking at him to be that return guy. I know they're going to throw him out of the backfield. I don't know how much he's going to carry the ball. But I would agree with the commenters. I think he's explosive. I think this would be a great Dog Nation Cover 4 topic. Which running back will have the most total yardage if we include return yardage and receiving yardage? I would put my money on James Cook being the closest. If Swift stays healthy, it's got to be Swift. But I would say that James Cook would have the second most total yardage out of those backs. That's just my opinion.
That's very interesting, and it's a surprising opinion. I'm glad you shared it with us. Let me kind of finish up on this topic. The Saturday scrimmage and Kirby's dissatisfaction with it, of all the things that kind of came out of the chatter from that, I took Kirby's dissatisfaction to be the most, you know, with the exception of the obviously viral Pickens video, the dissatisfaction that Kirby showed, I took that to be real. I even asked Andrew Thomas, is this the kind of thing that a coach is just supposed to say, or did you take him at his word on that? Obviously, he's going to say that he took him at his word, but I'm assuming that, Kirby also meant what he said. What did you make of apparently the younger guys, the less experienced guys, the non-starters, if you will, being the one bringing the sense of urgency and bringing the one being the ones bringing the real energy and juice to that thing on Saturday? What did you make of that assessment from Smart?
Yeah, wow. Well, you know, it was even, you know, and then Charlie Warner said Monday he thought that he pretty much called his teammates out and challenged them. Charlie Warner being the leader, saying, "Hey, we got to get mentally tougher. You know, we can't let the heat." And he said, "We got to pull the young guys along with us." So I thought that was an interesting caveat to put on there. No, he's sincere, BA. I mean, and I said this, I've said this before. I mean, there's no margin for error for this Georgia football team, and that's what Kirby Smart understands. When Kirby Smart says 24-5 is not good enough, that sounds like coach speak too, but it's not. If we're honest with ourselves, nothing less than a national championship is going to make fans happy. No one's going to say, "Oh, it's okay that they got there and lost to Clemson." No one's going to say, "Oh, well, you know, this time Alabama, you know, it's all right." No, nobody's going to say, "Well, you know, LSU was better if they beat them." Nobody's going to say, "Oh, well, it was at Auburn." Nobody's going to give Georgia an out if they lose a football game this year. Nobody's going to say it's okay. Nobody's going to feel okay and say, "Well, there's next year." That's not the mindset right now. And Kirby Smart knows that. So when he's talking about his football, he is looking at them and measuring them on a championship level. And they do not measure up right now in the pass game at a championship level. And why would they? They lost their top five receivers, and Jake's trying to get in sync with his receivers. You've got a very good story up on that on Dog Nation right now.
Thank you, Mike.
So why would they? So why would they at this stage of the fall? So, no, Kirby's not just throwing it out there. And let's remember, at the end of the conversation, at the end of the day, however the season turns out, you're still going to have Florida and Georgia Tech's athletic directors in that room deciding whether or not Georgia gets in a playoff. So Georgia better not lose the game, in my opinion.
Well, Mike, it's always fun to hear your thoughts on Georgia football. Your coverage of practice has been also incredibly fun to read as well. I'll look forward to seeing you myself in Athens on Thursday. And, of course, another big scrimmage for Georgia to go out and correct some of its mistakes this Saturday as well. We'll keep following you along at Dog Nation and talk to you back here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon as well.
All right. Appreciate that. Have a good one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So let me say this about the James Cook thing just for a moment, because it is a hot topic in our comment section, especially when I go on and on about Harry and who I am a big believer in, White, who I think everybody's a big believer in, and DeAndre Swift at this point's a proven commodity. You know, there is a pretty significant constituency that says, "Count me on the James Cook bandwagon." I get where that's coming from. But here's the thing, though. If you're going to make the case for Cook surpassing one of those other guys, you've also got to make the case for why one of them might falter. We don't like saying that because Georgia fans want to bet the over on all of the skill position players in this team. All the receivers have more yards than the national media thinks. All the running backs have more yards than the national media thinks. But if you're going to have him leapfrog ahead of somebody else in the pecking order, and it is a pecking order, you know, Harrigan's been here longer. White was a higher-rated recruit coming out of high school. DeAndre Swift has been the leading rusher for Georgia before. There is kind of an unofficial hierarchy established there. If Cook is going to leapfrog someone in that, you not only have to make the case for James, you have to make the case against one of those others. And right now, I don't have a bad word to say about James Cook whatsoever, but I don't have a very strong case to be made for why one of those other running backs might falter, barring injury now. Now, an injury changes everything. At that point in time, then you better believe my opinion will be altered. I hope an injury doesn't occur, but if it does, that does kind of change everything there. But apart from that, I don't see how you get there. And the same thing is true, because I know one of the things a lot of fans would like to see is a lot of two-back sets. We even talked about this during our R.S. Andrews cooldown yesterday. A lot of two-back sets where maybe Cook as your jet sweep guy or as your slot receiver catching passes. But once again, if you put him in that spot, then you've got to make the case for why Demetrius Robertson goes off the field or Kearse Jackson goes off the field or, you know, Dominic Blaylock goes off the field. Those are guys that otherwise would be in that spot. It's kind of like if you ever go to, like, these preseason football websites and look at the teams that project every NFL record, if you're doing that correctly, you ought to equal the same number of wins and losses. But a lot of these national websites don't do that. They end up having the league, like, going, like, 30 games over 500 against itself. That's impossible. It used to be the same way when it comes to the bracketology stuff. A lot of these guys that that project NCAA basketball tournament fields have 80 teams in the NCAA tournament. You can't obviously do that. So if you're projecting who the true playmakers are going to be for Georgia, you've also kind of got to project someone that you think maybe just misses that mark and has to wait his turn again for next year. Now, opinions are going to vary, and your mileage is going to vary on this a little bit, too. It's one of the things I love about the preseason conversation. A lot of folks see it just a little bit different way. Before we move on and do the rest of our SEC through, let me also remind you about my friends at Kroger. Did you know that right now, select Kroger stores, you can get 1 hour delivery? I don't know about you, but for my wife, my family, this is a godsend because, let's face it, we don't have a lot of time. I'm working, you know, 24 hours a day, it seems like, this time of year. That leaves all the shopping to go to my wife, and she's got kids to take care of and everything else. That means we need the convenience that comes from Kroger. And the best way for you to find out more about this, let me give you a couple ways. It's Kroger.com or the Kroger app. You can find out about the stores that are participating in this program, and you can place your order today. Get some of your time back. It's one of the ways in which Kroger makes life super easy and convenient for all of us, and I appreciate them doing that. Check them out online at Kroger.com or on the Kroger app for more information on that. With that said, let me do a couple of SEC through things here for a moment. Do we have this tweet, Brenton Cox tweeting out a little Florida talk here? He says, all these shots I'm taking, they must know I'm bulletproof. Now, is that a music lyric, or did he write that line himself? The crack staff here at Dog Nation World Headquarters doesn't know. So apparently Cox listening to a little bit of what's been said. And listen, I don't have a bad word to say about Brenton Cox, and I've made that pretty clear. But SEC football is not beanbag. This is not tiddlywinks. You know, this is not PE or rec league sports where everybody gets a participation trophy at the end of the season. There are going to be some hurt feelings when one guy comes to Georgia, then goes and plays for Florida. So Brenton's a big boy. He understands that, and I'm sure he's going to be fine with that. You won't hear on us on this program saying anything bad about him, you know, really whatsoever. We don't really say that about any player, you know, for the most part. But at the same time, probably best for him to stay off social media for a little bit, because the Florida-Georgia rivalry, or the Georgia-Florida rivalry in this case, is a pretty intense one right now, and he finds himself kind of at the center of that. Couple other SEC stories to get to. I saw where Alabama, I guess, it's been reported, is going to do one of these Hard Knock-style shows. There are a few teams that may do this with HBO, and I don't know. This may be the one area in which Alabama and Georgia are a little different. Smart, cut from a different cloth than Nick Saban. I think this is kind of a cool thing. I don't think it's detrimental to Alabama. I don't think any secrets will be revealed by this. But somehow I don't see Kirby Smart ever wanting to do this. I just don't. Now, he'll do some national media stuff with his team from time to time, but something tells me this is not something Kirby Smart would like. In the late stages of Nick Saban's career, he's become much more media friendly. Something tells me, though, Kirby Smart probably not going to go down that road if asked. But we'll see. You talk about must-see TV. It would be fun to see it if he did do that. And then let me also finish up with this. I saw one of these ESPN analysts. The truth is, I'd never even heard the guy. I don't know who it is. But he was on TV somewhere talking about how he was wrong about Joe Burrow, and he had been critical of Burrow. But come to find out, Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback, may be way better than he thought he was. And I'm not going to tell you that Joe Burrow is the all-SEC quarterback. I'm not going to tell you he's in the same category of a Jake Fromm or a Tua Tagovailoa or anything like that. But here's the one thing I will tell you about Burrow. I believe he's fine. I believe he's whatever your threshold for a good quarterback is. I believe that Burrow is probably a good quarterback. The month of November last year, I think, indicates that. He played well late in the season, played well against some opponents that were really looking for a big win. And Burrow delivered some big throws for LSU there in that moment. I think Burrow and the misperception of him as being kind of the typical LSU quarterback is part of the reason why I've kind of cast my lot with LSU upending Alabama and winning the SEC West. I believe this LSU offense is going to be better than some people realize, and I think that Burrow is going to be a reason why. He's not in the category of a Jake Fromm. He's not in the category of a Tua Tagovailoa, but he's better than a lot of folks realize, and I think that this, you know, ESPN guy I haven't heard of saying this, I think there's actually going to be a lot of media types will be saying this over the course of the first few months of the season. Watch that game against Texas. Sam Ehlinger for the Longhorns gets all the hype. Burrow's going to outplay Ehlinger that day, and the conversation about the Bengal Tigers, the Fighting Tigers from Baton Rouge, I think it changes drastically after that high-profile showdown with the Longhorns. We'll make that your SEC through. And speaking of Jake Fromm, let me talk about him for a moment. There are two national profiles of Fromm out there, and one's strictly online. Another one is online, and you can find this in your printed copy of Sports Illustrated if you still have that sitting next to your sneaker phone. Remember those the old Sports Illustrated sneaker phone? If you still get Sports Illustrated delivered to your house, you can read about Jake Fromm in there as well. The two stories were pretty similar. I thought the ESPN story written by David Hale, who used to be a UGA beat writer many years ago, I thought was probably the overall better one, and you should read these for yourself. I'll put a link to both of them when we post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com at the end of the day, our podcast, when we post that. I'll put a link to both of these. Here is my ultimate takeaway, though, from reading especially the ESPN piece, which focused in on a lot of Fromm's private life before he got to Georgia. It is obvious that Fromm and his family were big Georgia fans, and seemingly Fromm, up until the point where Richt kind of cast his lot more with Jacob Eason, grew up dreaming of playing for UGA. Not to sound sentimental and hokey, I know some of y'all think I'm too corny sometimes, and I probably am. That's a cool thing for me. It's a really cool thing. And what it leads me to believe is that I believe that Georgia will win a national championship eventually, and it may win a couple under Kirby Smart. Who knows what the future might hold. So from that standpoint, I've kind of said in the past, there isn't a ton of pressure on Georgia right now to win in 2019 because the sky's not falling, the future's still bright, 2020 and beyond. But assuming this is Fromm's year, I don't know there would be a better year than for Georgia to win a national championship with a quarterback who once begged a family member to buy him a Herschel Walker autographed football helmet. There is just something a little bit better of dogs who grew up loving the dogs winning with those guys would just feel a little better. And the obvious, you know, kind of unspoken context a lot of this is that with Georgia recruiting at the level that it does now, and we all love to see this roster stacked with five-star talent, there's an aspect of that, though, that becomes kind of transactional in nature. A lot of guys are here at Georgia now because it's the place to be. Fromm was liking Georgia before it was the place to be. So, you talk about storybook endings. If that young man is the one that truly leads Georgia to the promised land, I don't think you could write a better story than that. So yeah, I thought they were you know, both really good, really interesting. The SI piece kind of got more into some of the quarterback controversy stuff and some of the stuff that may have gone on with Fields last year. You know, even if some of the stuff they offered up had been previously unreported, listen, I think we know what happened last year. There's been no shortage of online chatter and scuttlebutt about that. So that seemed like well-traveled ground, but really seeing, you know, in print, in black and white, how much of a Georgia guy Fromm has always been, it makes the potential of this season with he and Werner and Andrew Thomas, who spoke to us yesterday about his love for Georgia in his home state, would make winning this year a pretty fun, cool thing. By the way, speaking of the Gators, mentioned them earlier, how about a Gator Hater Updater? 1,019 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. That number's going to keep climbing, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.